Well, our meeting with the Holy Man happened in 1998. 2001, I had the opportunity to return to the same monastery again with a different group of people. The Holy Man was no longer there. Everyone we asked, no one knew where he went. We were never able to find him again. However, as synchronicity would have it, it just happened that precisely on the day that we arrived at this monastery, it was a day of great celebration. It was a holiday in the Tibetan culture, and all the monks and all the nuns were required to leave the monasteries, leave the nunneries, go to the nearest village, and celebrate the holidays. There were just a couple of people left to watch over the monastery during the time they were gone. Well, there was a young monk who was there, and he was so willing to help us have our experience. We asked him when we arrived at this monastery, "Do you have a library in this monastery?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Would it be possible for us to see this library?" And he said, "No, it's not possible. It's a hidden library. It's secret." And I said, "But we know about it." And he laughed. And he said, "If you know about it, then it's no longer a secret." He said, "However, it's locked today." And I'll just say right now that time and distance mean very little to the Tibetan people. And he says, "If you'd like to see it, I'll have to get the keys." Well, what he didn't tell me was that the keys were in a house that was 30 miles away. And this beautiful little monk couldn't have been any more than 14, 15 years old. He rode his bicycle 30 miles in one direction to get the keys while we waited. And we had very creative things to do to fill our time. And rode that bicycle 30 miles back and was so proud. He was grinning from ear to ear as he placed that key into the huge bolted doors that guard the outer walls of this monastery. And he opened the door and he let us in. And we were inside immediately into a completely empty chanting hall. It's the most amazing sight, the huge tapestries, beautifully brightly colored tapestries that hang from the ceiling. And the monasteries are never heated, so the chill of the monastery immediately greeted us as we came through the door. And the Tibetan idea of warmth, if you are cold, you wrap more garments around you rather than heating the space that you're in. And as we entered into this completely vacant chanting hall, a massive altar was in front of us, in front of the room. And what we knew was that behind that altar was a false wall and a library. And the library was about 3 stories tall and only about 12 feet wide. And in that library, there would be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books. And he led us down a passageway with 30-foot tall Buddhas of compassion on either side of us. And as we entered into a completely darkened room, we turned on our flashlights, the lights from our video cameras, and immediately we were surrounded and overwhelmed by the sight of bookcases 3 stories tall with literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of very ancient Tibetan texts covered with dust. Some of them, the pages were so old they would almost crumble to the touch. The bookcases go so high into the room around us that our lights wouldn't even illuminate the highest shelves that were there. We couldn't even see the books that were up on top. And our translator was there. And I asked the translator, I said, "This is amazing. This is an amazing place. What's in these books?" And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, "Everything." And I said, "What do you mean, everything?" And he came over and he poked me right in the chest as he was saying it. And he says, "Everything." He said, "Every spiritual tradition that's ever come through this monastery, we have a record of, including yours." And I said, "How do you know?" And he said, "Here, I'll show you." And he pulled a book down from the bookcase, apparently at random. He opened it up and he began reading. And what he read to me was almost word for word the Essene Gospels of Peace and Elements of the Dead Sea Scrolls in a Tibetan monastery on this dusty old bookshelf. And I said, "Where did this come from?" And he said, "It was left here a very, very long time ago." And I didn't know until I returned back into the States. And I actually found the documents from some of the Roman historians that say that the Romans chased the Essenes into Tibet in the first century and lost track of them. And then we were now finding evidence of precisely the kinds of documents that show that that is what happened. Well, I'm sharing these stories for a reason. And there are many more stories that we could share. But the reason is this. We know that tremendous amounts of information have been lost in the lineage of wisdom that links us with our past. The implications of that loss of wisdom are vast. Because today, many of our scientific principles, our spiritual understandings, the way we view medicine, our historic beliefs, as good as they are, and they are good, however, they are based in incomplete records. They're simply incomplete. Along with the Dead Sea Scrolls and the books of the Dead Sea Scrolls, and the information that also I just shared earlier, there was another library that was discovered approximately the same time in history that picks up where the Dead Sea Scrolls leave off. The controversy of the Dead Sea Scrolls is that for the first time in a very long time, in almost 1700 years, some of the books of the Dead Sea Scrolls showed us the information that was edited from our biblical text over 1700 years ago. When the scrolls were discovered, those books were revealed for the first time in a very long time regarding the Old Testament only. Now, 1946, 1947, around the same time the scrolls were being discovered, another library called the Nag, N-A-G, Hammadi, H-A-M-M-A-D-I, library was discovered in Egypt as well. Seeing the controversy of the scrolls, this library was immediately turned over to the authorities, was translated and released in a very, very brief period of time. And the significance of the Nag Hammadi Library is that it picks up where the Old Testament scrolls leave off with the New Testament books that were edited during the 4th century, during the Nicaean edits of the Emperor Constantine. And the Nag Hammadi Library then goes even further with the New Testament traditions and many of the lost Gospels that we're only now beginning to understand. If we could summarize all this lost information, if we could summarize everything that we find in those edited biblical texts or in the Tibetan monasteries or in the Egyptian monasteries or in the monasteries of Peru, if we could summarize all of it together, what does it say to us today? What does it offer us today? Well, if we could bring it all together in a single sentence, it describes a greater understanding of our relationship to the world around us, to one another, and to the cosmos beyond. It tells us that we are part of something much, much greater, and then it takes us one step further, because these ancient records actually leave us the instructions of precisely how we implement these understandings in our lives. And the rest of this program now will be dedicated to developing those understandings of how we implement these ancient understandings into our lives, make them applicable in our world today.